Welcome to Black Girls World. I'm Nishe. This is my friends and me talking about things that are important to us. I hope it resonates with you, and if it doesn't, skip it. Today I'm talking to my friend Carla about toxicity, working while Black, and friendship. Stick around. Carla, you there?
Yep, I'm here.
Awesome. Thank you for doing this with me.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
Anytime. So Carla and I have known each other for a full 15 years. I actually met her. It sounds so long, right?
For real.
I met her my second year of college at 18 years old, trying to be a part of something she was already a part of. And we have just been friends since then.
Right. Yeah. We were babies.
Yeah, little babies, and our friendship has endured through some like real life stuff.
Right. Yeah.
So
that's probably the best part of that thing we joined with you.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I'd just be out here by myself.
Right.
So there's a bunch of stuff I want to talk to you about. The first thing is about relationships. So I've had some like really raggedy partners in my time, like to the extreme. Not all of them, but most of them. And, you know, it's possible that I was the raggedy one at times too. But I think that part of me having such raggedy partners throughout was that I was like attracted to some stuff that wasn't healthy. Like I got drawn to a narcissist or three and an avoidant dude or three or four. And I think it can kind of become a habit. Like you think love should feel like this, or it should hurt or be uncomfortable, or you should be having to prove yourself all the time. And so I don't think I'm really familiar with what like a healthy one looks like. But I know you have a healthy one.
Thank God, finally.
Yeah. I mean, and knowing, I know you've been through some that weren't. So my question is, in your experience, what are the features of a healthy relationship versus the toxic ones?
Okay. Well, I mean, definitely with the toxic ones, I get like my spirit tells me this person is not good for you. Oh, and wow. It manifests in like really physical ways, right? So like I will have stomach aches, I will have headaches, I will like dread our interactions because like you said, like there's that constant need to be fulfilling them or like this pressure that they put on you.
Yeah.
And in a healthy relationship, I do not have any of that. Like I am happy when he's around. I'm happy when I see his name pop up, like he texts me or calls me. Like it's exciting, and it's a good kind of exciting. It's not like a fearful kind, like with the toxic people I've been with before. So that's definitely like the major one for me. It's just like my spirit tells me like, okay, this is a good situation. It feels good. It feels fulfilling. You know, it doesn't feel like it doesn't hurt at all. So that's the main one for me is, you know, when I know, okay, this is a good situation.
So like your intuition is also like feeding information to your body. And I know exactly what you're talking about with that stomach ache or like that heart sink all the time. That like it physically hurts.
Yeah, like I think bad people give you IBS or something. Like,
oh my gosh,
it's not okay.
Yeah,
it's
like
ridiculous.
Making my stomach hurt.
Right, and like I think maybe that's in anxiety because I've been going to therapy now and talking about these things, and it's like, oh, when you start fidgeting and you can't focus, that's anxiety, and I had no idea. I never knew. Like, okay, so now I'm learning. Like, listen to your body and what it's telling you because it's important. And usually, you can heal yourself if you kind of listen.
Wow. Yeah, and it's something like that is something I probably normally wouldn't pay attention to. Like, okay, I'm tapping a lot. I'm nervous in this person's presence. Like, how do I feel when they're around?
Right. Yeah, and I know like it was definitely a difficult transition to go from these toxic people where it was like I always had to prove myself, or where like if I felt a certain way because I had certain standards, they were constantly making me question that and constantly telling me that like No, I'm wrong. I'm actually just insecure, and everything that they're doing is okay. I was used to that, and I think for a time I was gravitating towards that too, because like there was this excitement, and if I wasn't getting that, I was like, all right, well, this is boring, or this isn't real, or it's too good to be true, you know? And so having something that was more like a calm pace was abnormal for me. And it took some time to get used to.
Oh wow. After I had the most extreme version of a sociopath narcissist combo that really just like took me out for a while, I had an actual good guy come like a little bit later before I swore off dating. And I just thought he was so boring. But really, it was just the absence of drama and heartache in hindsight.
Right. And it's definitely that. And then I know sometimes, like, you'll push a good person away because you're like, oh, I'm not worthy of this, or oh, this is like, I don't trust them. Like, they're just gonna do me dirty in the long run anyway. So, not let me not even open myself up to them. Like, nah, I don't have time. You know what I mean? And so, it took a lot of learning on my part, and I'm glad that I learned a lot of that stuff before I met who I'm with now. So I worked out some of those kinks, but even still, like, he's really very patient with me. And I mean, from the beginning, we both kind of explained, like, this is where we're at, this is where we've been. And, you know, we're both very grown. Like, we've been on this earth 30 plus years. And so we have these experiences, and it's not realistic to think that we're coming into the situation without a past or without some sort of baggage. So, you know, where do we go from here? And we had to just kind of understand each other's triggers. And we had to understand, like, all right, when I feel a type of way, I need to communicate that to you. And you need to listen, and you can't invalidate my feelings just because you don't agree. And we could work together to find a path forward from that. And I mean, it's not always me, it's him too. And it's just this reciprocity that we have where we go back and forth and just kind of listen to each other, and that works.
That is so, that sounds so healthy and like so adult.
Right? I was like,
Wow.
where, how did this happen? Thank you.
Yeah, that's amazing. And what you said about like not being ready for it or not necessarily having healed from the past and pushing a good person away, like, ooh, I think that's exactly what happened with the person I thought was boring.
Oh.
I probably should have just been in therapy. Well, I was in therapy already, but like for other stuff, maybe I should have brought that up a couple times.
Yeah, well, it's funny because like I went to therapy when I first started going to therapy. I didn't even like have an outburst or nothing weird was going on. I think a lot of people assume that some you have to have a whole breakdown to go to therapy, right? I didn't have a breakdown. I was like, I have this good insurance. I'm gonna go to therapy and we're just gonna talk because I can, right?
Smart.
And right. And as I'm talking to her, she was like, so basically you have PTSD. And I was like, what? I haven't been to war. Like, what do you mean? And come to find out, like, just because, like, you don't have to go to war to have PTSD. If you had a traumatic experience in your past, you can have PTSD. And sometimes toxic relationships are traumatic for you.
Oh,
And
yeah.
so, yeah, so when it comes to me, I can be very distrusting, you know, because I've had people violate my trust before. And so it takes a lot for me to trust you. And once I do, I'm very hurt if you violate that. And it takes me a while to get over it. And so my therapist kind of broke that down for me. And I had no idea I was dealing with that sort of thing. I was just like, oh, you know, this is normal. You know, men sometimes don't act right, and so you shouldn't trust them, but it's not necessarily healthy.
So I also have PTSD, complex PTSD, and I think I spent my time in therapy like just trying to survive, learning how to survive and cope, and then like bailed before we got to the part where they teach you how to thrive. So
Oh.
there is probably definitely some gems or some things I could be learning by returning. But yeah, that's so interesting.
Yeah, and I tell everybody, like, go just because, go to have a conversation because, I mean, if nothing else, it just gives you so much more understanding of yourself and much better healthy, like, coping mechanisms because I was coping and most of those ways were very expensive. Like, I would just go on shopping sprees and just do random things that I probably shouldn't be doing. And so
Wow.
I didn't know that those were, you know, these were ways that I was coping, and they kind of just put a lot of what I was doing into perspective. So I definitely suggest anybody, like, go to therapy. It's good. It's worth it.
Yeah, if you got that insurance, we should use it. You're right.
Absolutely. Like, you're paying monthly or biweekly or whatever for this insurance, and you don't never go. Like, go to therapy and go get your, like, well, you know, physicals or whatever. Like, just go. Not, I
Use up
mean,
all those benefits.
exactly. Use your benefits. You're paying for them. Use them.
That's right. And that bring we're slaving at these jobs. That brings me to my next point about work, which is how I get my health insurance. I'm a smart girl. You're a smart girl. We're professional. We're accomplished and this and that. But there were some things that I really wasn't prepared to encounter in the workplace. That I think have to do with my culture. For example, the best example I have of this is, I was brought up that you confront an issue head on, whatever that looks like, and that's not how things go in these corporate type places. So, I guess what's your perspective on the cultural differences or the differences in expectations that make things harder for us than they need to be in the workplace. Us, us, black women.
I mean, work is definitely so much harder than it needs to be. I feel like there's just, first of all, you have to do the work, right? Like, you have actual tasks that you need to accomplish. But on top of that, there's these layers of, like, microaggressions and certain ways to communicate and misconceptions about how you might communicate. That just weigh you down and make it that much more difficult to just do your actual job. Like, I can't tell you how many times I might compose an email, because I'm very direct and straightforward, and I'm respectful too. But people might think that I'm being, you know, short with them, and they might think that I have an attitude, or I'm mean, or I don't like them. So I have to put all of this fluff into things. So that,
Exhausting.
so that everybody knows I'm a nice lady, but really, I just need you to answer this very simple question. And it's
Yeah.
exhausting. It takes up so much of my time and energy. I hate it.
That I hate that too. That's a major thing. And I think it's part of why I'd be so exhausted. Having to do exactly what you're saying. I'm a strong, tall, strong looking, I'm kind of tall. I'm not slight. I'm dark skinned. Like I have to do all these extra backflips to make it clear that I'm not gonna hurt you. Like for some reason around, I'm just gonna say it around white people at work. And that's been my experience throughout my 10-year career in education. And it's very exhausting to have to like do extra to prove that I'm not nice when being nice isn't my job, being effective is. So I don't know. I just don't know.
I'm not sure how that ever gets better. And, like, every day I tell myself, like, man, I need to just start a business like you so I don't have to deal with this, or at least there's some sort of end in sight, because it's so difficult. And, like, for me, like, I'm in tech now. And so even before I was in tech, I was in HR. Like, I've always been the youngest and the only black person there, you know? And it's like, I feel like I have to carry the culture on my shoulders because I'm the token black person that's in the room. And so I have to disprove all of these stupid misconceptions they might have about black people, because I'm the only one that they're probably ever going to interact with who can tell them the truth. And so that's a struggle too, because it's like, you know how there's that old thing, like, you know, sometimes you don't want to eat fried chicken in front of others because that's reinforcing the
A
stereotype.
stereotype.
And so it's even at work, it's like I have to constantly be mindful of, let me not reinforce the stereotype, even though it has absolutely no bearing on the work that I'm doing. But because I have this greater responsibility that I never even asked for, that I have to deal with every day, and it's tiring and it's lonely.
It's so lonely. And what you're saying about not reinforcing the stereotype, I actually got, while we were still at UCR, I got to work with this tutoring program, SOAR tutoring, and the woman who was kind of mentoring me through that, she took us to this fancy restaurant. And I was like, I don't know how to eat this. Like, I don't know how to eat this way. Which fork am I supposed to use? And she was like, if you want to use your hands, use them. They're going to think negatively about you regardless. And that freed me a little bit in terms of like not reinforcing stereotypes. And then I saw this man presenting recently. It gave me a whole identity crisis. But I saw this man with a PhD present to this conference of 3,500 people where I was too. And this was before COVID. And he had a grill in, like an Oakland grill in his in his mouth. And he had his Jordans on and like a hoodie. And he was like, I own suits, but I don't feel like wearing mine. Like, I want Black boys to see that it doesn't matter how you dress. You don't have to conform to these standards. Like, you could dress like this and still be up here like me. And I don't know, that freed me too a little bit, but it was too late. I had already like burned my hair straight to not cause a scene with my afro, you know?
Right. And that's, man, that is so empowering. And you hear stories about like how Steve Jobs used to always wear like a hoodie and just dress down. And it's like, man, I wish I had that freedom, you know?
Right.
Because I don't. I work in the government and we have a dress code that is business casual. I can't even wear jeans in there. And yeah. I'm afraid of coming in there with my hair wrapped, you know? And it's already difficult because I'm always changing my hair. And so they're always asking like, oh, your hair is long today. And oh, your hair is curly and it's so pretty and I love it. Can I touch it? Like, no, do not. Don't.
Wow, they asked you? Because they just be reaching out for me, like, without asking.
They do ask me. It might be because I typically walk around with, like, a RBF, but they ask before they touch me.
That's nice.
But it's still irritating that it's a thing, like,
yeah,
and that they don't understand, like, how wigs and weaves and braids work. Like, Google it. Stop asking me these questions.
Yeah, that's frustrating. All that stuff does make it harder. And it's not, I mean, at every job I've ever had, it's been this way kind of. And even when the people are nice, and I think that sometimes they mean well, it's still a burden to bear for us. So
absolutely.
Maybe there is no answer to making it better other than stop working, but you know, bills.
I mean, I think it's definitely better for us than maybe our parents' generation. But I don't know that making it better is our burden to bear. Like, yeah. I think that comes with other people being more aware of their own ignorance and learning how to act right. Because we're not the ones in the workplace ignorant. It's them. So why do we have to have this burden of teaching them how to act?
I totally agree with that. And if they decide that they do care about that, then I think they should hire someone who's trained to teach them that, not expect, you know, us to double as the diversity committee.
Right. Like,
for free.
I should not be automatically expected to be on the diversity committee just because I'm of the culture I'm from.
Yeah, agree. Yeah, that's tough. I guess there's no answer to like fixing it.
Not an easy one.
Yeah, you're right.
I mean, we cope with it, right? We get by, and we learn as we go.
At what expense? Like, we got hypertension, high blood pressure. Like,
I mean, I will definitely say, like, setting boundaries is important. I've learned to do that at work. I've learned to take my time off because I've earned it, and I should. And so, like, those self-care days are so important. But like you said, you're tired. You're at work for so many hours, and it's exhausting. And you should not feel guilty for using the vacation that you've accrued to take a day off and do whatever it is that you want to do. Obviously, follow your company protocol, but use your time off. That's what it's for. So for me, that's huge. For, like, that's how I think I've survived this long. Working for the government.
I definitely have started, you know, taking my days. I mean, I've always been like that, where I'll take a mental health day if I need to each month, or, you know, whatever. But there is that like underlying guilt, like, okay, well, they need me. But honestly, unless you really work with like children, actual children near you, or in like something where people are getting services from you, I think that there aren't really paperwork emergencies that can't wait or that someone else can't do for you. So yeah, for sure. Everybody should take their time off.
Yeah. And I think for me, it was a matter of learning, like, they always say they need you and everything is an emergency all the time. And granted, I don't really interface with customers like that. I just have projects and due dates, right? And so I know if I can get something done the next day. Now, when I do payroll activities, the due dates are a little more severe or whatever, but even still, like, there's backups. There are supervisors. If something comes up, business will still go on. And I think that was made the most clear to me when one of our managers, she was super overworked and she ended up having a stroke.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And she passed away. And she was so overworked, she took on so much responsibility. And guess what? The office was not shut down. The work still got done. And so, I mean, it's definitely a sad and worst case scenario. But I think that really opened my eyes to knowing that, like, okay, even though they're saying this is an emergency and this needs to get done right now, like, I think everybody's going to be okay. When you force them to be okay, they are. So I just kind of have that mentality.
Yeah, I saw this, you know, like a slide grid on, not a slide grid, like a slide deck kind of thing on Instagram that basically was saying all the ways that white supremacy manifests in the traditional workplace. And one of them was a consistent sense of urgency that doesn't allow you to do your best work or to ever have downtime on the job. But then also there was one that was about like people not honoring forms of communication that aren't in writing. Like if I have a conversation with one of my supervisors and she can lie about it and I can't prove it because nothing was written, and that becomes an issue for me. So I think that might be another way that, you know, I'm taught my word is my bond or whatever, you know, and if we have a verbal agreement, it needs to be honored, but that's not necessarily always the case in workplaces.
Right. Yeah. Workplaces can definitely be grimy. And, it's funny how you said how white privilege manifests in work, because I remember in my last job, I had maybe 3 times as much work as everybody else. And I would see other people chilling, like they would have downtime. They would have time to like play around and learn new things. And I just never had any free time. And come to find out, it was because I could do it. They gave me more to do. And,
oh my gosh.
Right. And my mentality, the way I was raised, you know, I'm going to probably bend over backwards to do that work to try to be a good employee, you know. And so I didn't know that was part of why. And of course, like I was the only Black person there. So the Black person who's working, you know, efficiently, quickly, accurately, who's doing a very good job, because of course, when you're a Black person, you got to be the best and the fastest because you have to prove yourself. Good. Yeah. And so I was getting twice and 3 times as much work.
So that's crazy to me.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. That's insane. I had, not this job that I have now, but the one before that, I had this tyrannical boss. And she would like have me like substitute teaching classes, which was not my job. And in doing that, like in the time I'm spending substitute teaching these classes or covering for these teachers who are absent, my work is piling up, and I'm, you know, telling her, you know, my work is not getting done if I'm interfacing with kids like in the classroom, like I still have that pile of work, and then my deadline doesn't move, can I get an extension or this or that? And she'd be like, no, not really, you know, like just all these like unrealistic expectations. And then of course I'm still going to get my work done, because like you're saying, twice as good for half as much. I'm gonna you know, meet my deadline regardless. And there was a point where I was working my contract hours, picking my kids up from school, bringing them back to the office with me so that I could get my work done on time.
Right.
And I just think about like, that's insane. That's nuts.
That's ridiculous. And I was so glad once I was there long enough to get to a point where I could just say no, or I could say like, I'm going to be off tomorrow.
Because oh my gosh, that's too what much. I needed to be able to do.
Yeah, yeah. Because when I started to recognize like, okay, this is not okay. Why is this happening to me? And a really good thing, and I think you even encouraged me to do it, was to start documenting. I start documenting everything. Like, I had receipts to where, because a lot of times if you complain about something or you bring it up, they assume it's an emotional decision, you know, like you just feel a type of way. But when you have the receipts, you have the documentation, you can quantify your problem, then that's a little bit harder to dispel or gaslight you about. And so I definitely started, like, I was documenting what I was working on, what everybody else was working on, how much time it was taking, the level of difficulty for these things. And I was like, you know what, actually, I don't have time to do what you're asking me to do, and here's why. And eventually, they did start to leave me alone a bit.
That's actually what you have to do. I saw a tweet that captured it perfectly. It said, your first job as a Black person is to document your job, and your second job is to do the job. Yeah. And it's like, you can't prove anything you didn't document in these places. So if anything is amiss, you should be writing it down, dates, times, who did it, what you think the reason was, all that stuff. Which is crazy.
Which is the same thing, like when you have those verbal conversations, a lot of people do a best practice of coming back and sending out a follow-up email to reiterate what was discussed, so that now you have that paper trail. And it's crazy because a lot of those like best practices and tips, I learned from people who've been in the workforce longer than I have. I can ask like my uncles and my aunts and things, and they can tell me based on what they've learned. But, you know, other cultures, I feel like they've been having these conversations for a longer time than I have. You know, they have this history to build on. Like, they come into the workforce and they're already ahead of the game because they already know how to move and how to operate, where I'm figuring it out as I go for the most part. And then when I have an issue, I could reach out and maybe have somebody to ask. So
maybe, yeah,
right.
Yeah. And it's also interesting, some of the things that like we have to do to survive on the workforce. I'm learning from having a business and working with someone who's been an entrepreneur his whole life, that those things don't really serve you when you try to like go do your own thing, you know, like some of the uncertainty you have, or some of the like having to do all this fluffy, especially the fluffiness, like having to put all that fluff into your emails or into your day-to-day interactions to show that you are like a nice person and you come in peace. Like it's actually frowned upon in some of the business spaces I've been in. So it's just so interesting. I don't know.
Yeah, it's definitely
trying to different. Switch back and forth. Yeah, for sure. The last thing that I wanted to talk to you about is friendship. Before I ask you my question, I have two examples of how you are like the sturdiest person I know, like the most solid friend I have. And the first example is kind of embarrassing. So like, I had been talking to this guy, and I'm sure you remember this. I had been talking to this weirdo guy who at the time I didn't think was weird, but he had all those unhealthy, like toxic characteristics and red flags and stuff that I was ignoring. And I had been experiencing some debilitating depression, like, and I was in one of those stints where it's hard for me to do anything. And so my dishes had like piled up, and I had lived in my house for a year, but like the bed was still on the floor, and the bed frame was like propped up against the wall, not put together, still in its box. And this guy was finally going to come visit me. Like, this elusive, distant dude was going to come visit me, but I had all these issues with my living space because I didn't have the energy to do any of the stuff that needed to be done to it. And so like, you came over and you washed my smelly dishes and you helped me, like you pulled out your screwdriver and helped me put my bed frame together. And then you just left, like nothing happened. Like the jerk didn't even show up, but like, I don't know. You just came through in the clutch. You didn't ask any questions. You didn't degrade me. You didn't make any weird like side comments like, oh, how could you let your dishes get like this? Like, I don't know. I love that. I always think about that. It always makes me teary eyed. Second example. Okay. I'm going to try. This second example is not going to make you cry. I promise. But this just happened recently where you came by and I mentioned that you smelled good. And you told me you were going to text me the name of the perfume, but you never did. And I didn't really think about it again until my birthday, when a package on my porch came and it was the perfume. And I just thought it was so thoughtful and it moved me to tears. Like, one of my closest friends didn't even bother to tell me happy birthday. But you had like this one you heard this one comment from me and then you got me the thing that I wanted. And I don't know, I just, you're such an intentional friend. Like it's almost like you are, I don't know if you're naturally like this or if you're actually trying, but my question is like, how are you doing that? How are you so consciously and intentionally maintaining these friendships? And your friendships last really long.
Well, thank you, Spish. And honestly, you've been talking about perfume for a while now.
You didn't even notice.
Like every now and again, you'll say something about perfume. And I did remember that one time, like that caught me. And I was like, Nishay been talking about perfume. Let me get this for her birthday. That'll be really nice.
It was so sweet. I could really cry.
I'm glad. I know, like, I have been more intentional with my friendships now, just because it has become more clear to me that it's necessary, because I went through like this terrible situation and it kind of opened my eyes to how lucky I am to have these really great friends who are there for me and support me and kind of just held my hand and walked me through this situation that I wasn't really prepared for. And for me, my close friends are more like family. I kind of like pick, and I'm lucky I've picked good people, and I kind of like stick to them and gravitate to them, and like, that's it, we're here for life. And so after like a lot of that stuff happened, I was like, you know what? Like, I only have a handful of friends anyway. Let me put my all into building and adding to these people, because I really do appreciate and love them, and let me show them that I do. And I feel, especially like with COVID and everything going around, like, I think for me, I'm just very grateful. And so I know that if I'm in a position to like make somebody a little bit happy, then I just kind of think about, okay, how can I do that? Do I have an opportunity here? And then I do it. But I think that's definitely been amplified now, because I just have been through some things to where I have a little bit more appreciation for those people that are close to me. So it's definitely intentional, for sure.
Yeah, that's admirable. It really is. Because just like there's raggedy like relationships, I've had a few raggedy friends that have fallen off since, but I definitely have an appreciation for my friends, and for you, with you, it always just stands out to me how you're very considerate, like, of people's feelings, like even down to like, it's time to like watch something. There was like this group thing and you were like, do you want to be in this group text? Do you want me to put you in right now and then take you out afterwards? Like, how do you want to handle this? Cause you just know me really well. And I just thought that was so considerate. Like, you asked, you know?
Like, and I think, know. Like, it makes me half happy. Of it is knowing, like, that's what you would do for me, you know? Like, you would ask me before you do those things, because you know that I don't really want to be bothered with half of that. And so you'll give me the choice. But I think a lot of it comes from, like, actually listening to your friends, because they will tell you what they don't want to deal with and what they do. And I know that you don't want to have nothing to do with some group chat half the time, but you don't want to be left out either. And so for me,
oh my gosh,
it's like, you've already said this and I heard you when you said it. So here, now we're in this situation. Hey, letting you know, this is what's happening. You can come, you can not come. It's okay. It's no pressure. And I think a lot of that comes from like, at this point, I think I have a little bit of wisdom, because for me, I know a lot of it is pressure. It's, you know, feeling like you're going to disappoint somebody, is feeling like your back is up against the wall where you have to show up when you really don't want to, you really don't have the energy, or you got other things going on. And knowing that, I don't take stuff personally. Like, if somebody tells me they can't make a event or whatever, like, it's not about me all the time. You know, they have their own stuff going on and it's cool. Yeah. It's okay. Like, I can be comfortable in my friendships like that. But for you, it's a lot of reciprocity. Like, these are things that you do for me too. Like, I show up for you, but you show up for me in the exact same way all the time. And I think that's kind of like the beauty of our relationship, is because like, we just kind of get each other and we're very intentional and we're very like kind and thoughtful, to where it's like, Like if I want to watch a show, you'll tell me like, nah, that's triggering, don't watch that. Or like skip this part and then start back over here because you know what it's like to be triggered. And so you'll tell me like, this is not what you want. Like what really touched me was when the thing happened with Chrissy Teigen. And you text me ahead of time and was like, stay off of Twitter for a while. And I was like, oh, okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Because yeah, that would have really set me back. But you were aware of what was going on and you let me know and you warned me. And I think like stuff like that is so important.
Yeah, for sure. You're not about to make me cry on my show, man. Like, I'm not gonna keep doing this with people, man. But Spech, I'm actually about to start sobbing. So I love you. Thank you for coming on the show. And yeah, I'm gonna call you in a
Okay,
second.
thank you. This was fun.
All
Love
right.
you too. Bye.
Love you. Bye.